Go to TMA Electric in Port Huron for all your electrical needs. From service upgrades to LED lighting to a full system check and oil change for your generator, along with preventative maintenance. Call 810-266-1450 or stop by. They're at 2514 Chestnut in Port Huron.
All right, 8:40 on this Thursday morning. More improvements being made at the Fort Gratiot Light Station, which is a St. Clair County park. Joining us right now is the Parks Rec Director, Dennis DeLore. Good morning, Dennis.
Hi, Paul.
This is really cool, the way that the light station has just really been renovated so much over the last few years.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. I've been very fortunate to be involved with it since day one. So what happened was we acquired the property through the Lighthouse Act, which was established in the early 2000s to preserve lighthouses around the United States. So what happened was is the federal government decided that they wanted to liquidate those assets, send those out into the communities. So they offered up to the states first, mm-hmm. then local municipalities. It was offered to the city of Port Huron, which they respectfully declined, and the county was going to run the facility. So that's where we got involved, and I got to be there from day one and be a part of that. In fact, my office was there for quite a while, for over a decade. So got to be a part of that restoration, and it was a our start was with the tower, and we had a Save America's Treasures grant that helped us preserve the tower. We replaced 35,000 brick on it, and it just snowballed from there.
Yeah, I mean, without the tower, there's no point in really preserving the rest of it. And that tower was in rough shape when you took over.
Yes, they had actually closed it to tours right before we took over the property. The Coast Guard did not feel it was safe. So we had engineers, architects, and people that were really skilled in preservation take a look at it. So when we signed the agreement to take over the site, basically you have to work with the National Park Service and the State Historic Preservation Office to maintain a historic site, a historic property that's been, you know, transferred. And so with that comes a lot of work, detail, and information. So you have to do things the right way. So the engineers came in, they looked at the structure, they recognized that there were some fissures that were in the surface of the tower, and after a close investigation, realized that it was mostly cosmetic and not structural, which is a good thing. But what that meant was that we were going to need to replace a lot of brick. So what had happened is the soft brick that's on the tower, it's a very, very soft brick. It was locally sourced back in the 1820s when the tower was built. There's a story that goes along with that and the acquisition of those bricks, but the bricks were not of high quality, and they're very porous. So what happened was, is over the years, water infiltrated that brick, and then it did what they call spalling, where the brick face pops off, and a lot of bricks continue to do that. Moisture was trapped. But it didn't explain the fissures, like these vertical fissures that were in the tower. So what we had to do is we had to figure out what was causing that. Water was getting into the tower somehow. So we didn't learn what was causing that until we started removing some of that old brick. So the brick was not salvageable on the outside. Now, there's the tower is 8 feet thick at the base, and it tapers to 2 feet mm-hmm. thick at the top. There's a lot of brick there.
Yeah.
Or so we thought. The outer two layers were bad. So we had to remove those, and that was about, like I said, 35,000. When we took that off or started taking that brick off, we hired a company called National Restoration. They're specialized in historic structures and brick structures. And they came in, and they started stripping the brick because it's a unique tower, you know, and how it's shaped.
Right.
It's a very lengthy process. So they had to take the brick off in 8-foot sections and work their way around. And then they had this system, which is called the Unico system. It's a platform and mast system that lifts up all at the same time. There's three of them that go around the tower. And as they went up, so did the platforms. Now, the platforms can hold a lot of weight, right. A lot of bricks, and that helped them move all the way up the tower. But when they started peeling off those first couple of layers, we were surprised to see rubble stone hidden behind it. So then we had figured out why we had water problems. So this, what they did is they built a what they would consider a cribbing basket. So there were brick on the inner section of the tower and the outer section of the tower. And then they built that up, filled it with a lot of brick or stone, local stone, mm-hmm. and then tied it together with bonding courses every 4 feet.
Right.
But those baskets were loose stone, and it just basically came in and was free standing. So the water would travel, and it were worked its way out of the tower. So we had to solve that problem, which I think we're still working towards that. Yeah. But once the brick was replaced, we did some painting and got the outside shored up with new roofs and repaired the tin roof on the lantern room. And that was the very first step. And then, like I said, it snowballed from there.
Yeah. Fascinating. It's like unraveling history, kind of, isn't it?
It was. In fact, no one knew that the stone was in the walls. We thought it was solid brick.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it explained a lot when we saw that dry stack stone in the walls. It was free. You know, there was no mortar in between the joints. It was a very unique construction process. But, you know, it also told us a lot about the tower. We learned a lot about its condition, you know, the science of it and how it was constructed and why it had the problems that it had.
Yeah.
But even so, it lasted 180-some years at that point. So it just was a matter of taking care of the rest of it. And that's where we're at today with the tower, is trying to finish up some of those things.
And there are other buildings on the property as well of real historic significance that have been renovated too. And what's the latest renovation there?
Well, we do have a lot of facilities there. So there's six historic buildings on the property, and they range from the 1820s, which is the tower, the oldest. And then we have the keeper's dwelling, which is from 1874. We have the fog signal building from 1900. We have the single keeper's building, which is from 1932. We have the retired Coast Guard station that's from 1932. And we also have the four-bay equipment building, which is from 1938.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these buildings are in different states of restoration. Right. I'm happy to say that the four-bay equipment building and the fog signal building are pretty much done in their restoration. It's just maintaining them now.
Right.
The duplex is a big project that we're working on. We just put a new roof on it last year. It's a beautiful roof. It's a metal tin roof with Yankee gutters and all kinds of stuff. But now we're at a point where we're finishing up some of those, and we went back to the tower. There's a program out there that we've used a few times, which is the Michigan Lighthouse Assistance Program. So if you drive around town, you'll see people that have lighthouses on their license plates. That's the program that supports the Michigan Lighthouse Assistance Program. So basically, the funds that come from those plates go into the hopper for restoration projects exclusively to lighthouses. And Michigan has 120-some lighthouses, so there's a lot of need for restoration. We've been fortunate to get this grant twice. We've applied for it numerous times, but there's certain projects it's very competitive that, you know, score better. So our last project scored really well, which was the restoration of the lantern room and watch room. So this is the very top of the tower. So these are the rooms where you can see the light, you know, flash, and if you drive through Port Huron, you can see it going along Thomas Edison Parkway, the green light, the famous green light. So we did work to that room and the room below it. So the grant was, the project cost was about $42,000. Of that, we had about $25,000 to work with the Michigan Lighthouse Assistance Program grant, and a match from the Friends of the Fort Gratiot Light. The Friends of the Fort Gratiot Light is a volunteer group that is very dynamic. Most people that are in our community know about Sandfest,
right,
which is a great event. They put that on, and they raise the funds there, and that's where a lot of our matches come from, and that's where a lot of our funding comes from for restoration projects. They work with us to choose projects, and they systematically go through and pick them out, and we try to get them accomplished, and that's part of that 25-year goal. Well, the tower restoration is one of the main, you know, objectives. Right. So we basically removed all the non-historic fabric up in the tower, got the original size of the glass put back in the tower. So now it looks like it did in 1932 to 1938. We restored the lantern room itself. There was a floor in there that we removed. But we also mixed some modern with the old. So everything we do, we have to get approved by the state of Michigan. So it goes through SHPO, which is the State Historic Preservation Office, and then the National Park Service. So we have to follow the standards of preservation and restoration. So part of that process was to open up that floor, give back that appearance, but it also allows light in so guests can actually see up into the lantern room. It's still off limits to the public because there is an active light in the tower. It's an aid to navigation, so LED, a little bit different than the old days, but it still functions, and it's has a very important job, mostly for small craft. This way, guests, when they come up in the tower, they can see up into the lantern room and see also the ceiling, which we removed. There was a wooden ceiling in there that was blocking the original vent. So when the tower was built, it had a Fresnel lens in it. So it burns a fuel. It has to off gas and exhaust. So there was a chimney actually in it. So what that did is opened all that up, wow. exposed it, we painted it, got it all cleaned up, and it looks fantastic.
That surprised me a little bit when you said it's an important aid to navigation. I thought, I don't know, that it was, you know, just for show, because the Coast Guard doesn't maintain it anymore. It's not the Coast Guard. So they said, hey, don't need the lighthouse here anymore. You go ahead and do what you want with it, make it a tourist attraction. And yet it still is really necessary.
Right. In fact, you know, that is kind of one of the misconceptions, is that, you know, that it's not functioning anymore. There are still some functioning lighthouses in the state of Michigan. Now, the Coast Guard didn't want to own the buildings, but they still wanted access. Mm-hmm. So they have like an easement, if you will, to use that space. Okay. They control the light. They maintain it. They come out every year from Detroit or Saginaw and come up and take a look at the light and make sure it's operating, functioning. That is an LED light. It's green, which is unique to Port Huron. We have that here because originally with the trains coming up the shoreline, there was confusion about train headlights and the lighthouse lantern.
Sure.
So they changed it to a variable flash, and then it went to green to differentiate between the two. So it's very unique in that way, but it is still an active aid to navigation.
It's also not a huge light bulb, is it?
No, LED.
Yeah.
So we've had about 4 or 5 different lights in its history go through it. The Fresnel lenses, which were some of the original technology that were in our lighthouse, I think we had a 4th and 5th order or a 3rd and 4th order, but those were pretty big glass prism-based lights. Mm-hmm. So they reflected and refracted the light into a concentrated beam that people could see for about 16 miles. Okay, the new technology, which is LED, can be seen about 16 miles, just under. So it's about the same.
Yeah.
But we've gone from a massive light that was literally 4 feet across and probably about 4 feet tall to it's about, I think, 1 foot tall and maybe 6 inches across.
Boy, if Tom Edison could come back and take a look at that.
Right. Right. It'd be pretty impressive.
Absolutely. So what a great community effort this has been to restore the lighthouse and the property there, because it's not just the county parks, although they're the manager of it, essentially, but you mentioned Friends of the Fort Gratiot Light, and the Port Huron Museum, too.
Absolutely, and I don't want to forget the Port Huron Museum, because they are a critical, crucial partner in that. They help by providing programs, the tours, you know, they do a lot of research and making sure that these tours are, you know, sharing correct information. They have a gift shop there that, you know, helps, you know, support the site. And, of course, they staff it. So we have park staff there that does the maintenance aspect of it. But when it comes to the boots on the ground programming, the tourists, they're the first line. And it's great to have that partnership. Our department is very strong on partnerships. And at the light station, we are very fortunate to have two very strong partnerships with the Friends, which provide financial support, and the Port Huron Museum that provides the programming, boots on the ground effort to maintain it.
It's a Port Huron icon, and we don't just appreciate it here, but people from all over the country and really all over the world come to see it. It is the oldest lighthouse in Michigan. It's a huge tourist attraction.
That's the one thing that I love to boast. Every time anywhere I go, it's like, well, we've got the oldest. Yeah, there's 120 some other lighthouses in Michigan, but we have the oldest.
Yeah.
And it's got a very storied history. Yeah. It has, and it's very detailed, which is good, so we can tell that story. But, you know, there is a fascination with lighthouses. I'll tell you this, Paul. I worked at a lighthouse in the Upper Peninsula in Copper Harbor. People would drive. That's where US 41 ends, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's 1,990 miles from there all the way to Miami, Florida. And they would drive to the end of this road to see a lighthouse.
Yeah.
And, you know, the following for lighthouses is huge. People travel the country and even the world to see lighthouses. And so we benefit from that. You go into our parking lot on a summer day, and you see license plates from all the lower 50, you know, so the 48, lower 48. But it's pretty amazing.
And it's been just great to witness the restoration of it, indeed. Dennis, appreciate you coming in. We'll continue to talk more about this and other things going on with Parks and Rec, because you got a full plate there these days.
Oh, we sure do.
All right, Dennis, thanks again.
Thank you.
Dennis DeLore, Director of St. Clair County Parks and Recreation, with us on WPHM. 5 minutes now before 9 o'clock.